Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. Speaking today with Richard Eidlin. He's the business outreach coordinator for the Apollo Alliance, which is an exciting project launched by a coalition of labor and environmental organizations and business groups to map out an energy future, a sustainable energy future for the United States. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you, James.
So tell us about the origins of the Apollo Alliance.
Well, the project started about 2.5 years ago by a number of think tanks who had taken a look at the American political landscape and recognized that the debate over energy issues had kind of got bogged down in a lot of partisan bickering, and that the contention that environmental health and environmental protection was hindering economic development just wasn't true. So the Apollo Alliance began with the intention of, quote-unquote, reframing the conversation and suggesting that the economy could grow and, in fact, would prosper by investing public and private monies in clean energy technologies. And that message became very attractive to the largest labor unions in the country, environmental groups, and more recently to businesses that have been recruited. And the Apollo Alliance is affiliated with the Campaign for America's Future, which is based in D.C., and the Apollo Alliance has a staff in Washington and elsewhere across the country that I can tell you about.
Well, it seems incredibly timely right now. Well, it's always been timely. It's the problems have loomed for quite a while, but now with gasoline at double the price that it was recently, and with the hurricanes raising attention of both the energy shortages and the role of energy and climate change, then, you know, is there an increased attention now to these kinds of solutions that the Apollo Alliance has been offering?
Yeah, we find that there's really been quite a groundswell of interest, particularly since the 2004 national election, when energy assumed some prominence in the debate, not as much as we would have liked to have seen. And then particularly since the Hurricane Katrina, we think the whole conversation is really beginning to change. With oil prices, natural gas prices increasing dramatically, concern over climate change growing, and a number of the states, particularly in the Midwest, concerned about their competitiveness, there's a great deal more attention being paid to how to diversify our energy supply. And Apollo, I should note, is working at the national level at a number of initiatives, and we also are active in about 15 states across the country.
One of the things that seems interesting to me about this perspective of the Apollo Alliance, you have the 10-point plan for good jobs and energy independence, and it mm-hmm. includes a strategy for technological innovation investments in various fields. And, of course, the free marketeers that have been running U.S. domestic policy for the last 5 years, they generally would argue that as soon as oil gets to a certain degree of cost, then all kinds of R&D money will flow to the appropriate places, and the technological innovation will be unleashed to answer all the problems that we have. So I think part of what the Apollo Alliance needs to argue and is an argument for is how we could use money to target technological investment. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if one looks at the recently passed energy bill, it was about $14.5 billion, and less than 10% of that, for instance, went to support for R&D for renewables, wind, solar, biomass, hydrogen, fuel cells, etc. So anyone who is to assess the history of federal support and subsidies and investment and energy would very quickly conclude that there's been a disproportionate level of support for fossil fuels. So while Apollo Alliance very much believes in the market as well, we don't feel that it's been particularly an even or level playing field. So our 10-point plan, James, lays out a series of investment strategies totaling about $300 billion over 10 years. And this is envisioned to be a bold plan, similar to President Kennedy's call to action in the 1960s. And we think that public investments will help to leverage private monies, which could in turn help to leverage union pension funds. So let me give you a few examples, if I could, of part of our investment strategy. One comes from California, where State Treasurer Phil Angelides has developed a program called the Green Wave Initiative that Apollo was helpful in formulating. And that dedicates about $1 billion towards energy efficiency, high-tech, clean energy type of ventures, particularly in hydrogen, fuel cells, some in photovoltaics. And that type of project, using teacher pension fund monies, a small portion of what's in that overall fund, could be something that could be replicated in Connecticut, New York, Michigan, and elsewhere. Another example is an initiative in Michigan we're working on with Governor Granholm there. It's something called the Jobs Tomorrow Initiative, where tobacco settlement monies will be set aside for investments in advanced automotive efficiencies and alternative energy technologies. So there are any number of state and pension fund activities that could help to level the playing field, direct capital in this towards these activities. And again, that in turn really incentivizes the private market to make those similar types of investments.
There's two aspects of the program that I think are also highlighted by the recent experience that we all had with New Orleans and Katrina and everything. One is the notion of smart urban growth, which there's been discussion now about rebuilding New Orleans around a green and more sustainable, strategy. And the other is transportation, with the fact that so many poor folks weren't able to get out of the path of harm's way. And in general, poor folks can't get to jobs, and we don't have a very good transportation infrastructure in the country. And your strategy talks about investing in different kinds of rail strategies and bicycles and buses and energy efficiency in various ways in transportation. Can you talk a little bit about that, the urban planning aspect and the transportation aspect?
Mm-hmm. Well, much of our focus has been on urban communities, although rural and agricultural concerns are a great interest as well, and we're actively working on those. As far as smart growth within urban areas, we recognize that there are a number of very practical steps that could be taken. One is high-performance buildings, where buildings, given that the large amount of energy they consume, could be designed to be just much more efficient and use far less energy and thus reduce the strain on the electric grid infrastructure. As far as transportation options, Apollo has been supportive of light rail transportation systems, of increasing funding for a project for Amtrak. And when one looks at the opportunity in New Orleans, I very much agree with you that there's a great opportunity to do something different, to not repeat the same reliance on box stores, ex-urban communities, requirements of everyone having an automobile, and that a different type of planning approach could be taken. That approach would encourage community-based development, would put monies into the hands of community organizations, and would take into account some of the social equity concerns and issues that were really highlighted by Katrina. I should mention that Apollo's focus, while linking energy independence and good jobs, has also at its core a commitment to resurrect urban communities and engage people that historically have been neglected and not had an opportunity to be part of the political process. So the rebuilding of New Orleans is a real priority, and there are lots of smart ideas about concentrated development that reduce sprawl and that ultimately reduce reliance on single automobiles.
It is notable that the Republicans immediately jumped on Katrina as an opportunity to push their pet policy solutions, such as cutting the minimum wage, cutting all kinds of labor protections, cutting environmental protections in order to reduce the price of, allegedly reduce the price of fuel and encourage economic development. And, you know, it just seems so counterproductive. Here you have one of the poorest states in the union and a bunch of people who have just been immiserated further, and yet then you're cutting the minimum wage.
Yeah, and they also have cut the prevailing wage and have relinquished in various environmental protocols and requirements for development purposes. So part of Apollo's mission is to help build a political constituency to advocate for progressive social and economic and environmental policies and energy policies in this country. And there clearly is a different vision in the White House, one that we don't think is particularly well designed, that's not considerate of a wide range of stakeholders, and we think there's a much smarter and more humane way to go about rebuilding the city and the region. We're working with a number of groups across the country and are actually considering holding some type of summit that would highlight best design, best architecture, smart, sustainable growth policies that could be hopefully introduced into the rebuilding plan in New Orleans.
I'm speaking with Richard Adlin. He's the business outreach coordinator for the Apollo Alliance, which can be found at apolloalliance.org. And a wonderful set of documents there and a news blog that talks about the latest news in this neck of the policy woods. You address as part of the 10-point, I'm just focusing on the 10-point program here. I guess it's my weakness for 10-point programs. Mm-hmm. They seem to summarize things very well. But point 9 of the 10-point program is plan for a hydrogen future. Now, this one's been relatively controversial because some people argue that that hydrogen will never be able to produce as much energy as it will require to make. And so it's not really going to be a green technology. Is there been any thought given to that problem?
The 10-point plan, I should note, is was designed to be a sort of a prompting or visionary document, and within any of those points, there's a great deal of detail and some, you know, a great room for a discussion of different options. Our thinking around hydrogen future is that it would be based primarily from renewable energy resources. The real question, as I think you're aware, is what is the source for the hydrogen? Are we burning more coal? Are we requiring more natural gas? So there are a number of local, maybe state, or even regional approaches to this. In Los Angeles, for instance, we're talking with a number of hydrogen venture capital companies that want to help develop the infrastructure there that might focus on vehicles, on vehicular transportation initially. So we have a number of alliances, a number of research projects underway regarding hydrogen, and our hope is that the private markets in particular will support the use of clean technologies to generate the hydrogen rather than relying, for instance, on natural gas.
And what about nukes?
Nukes, it's an interesting question, James, and it kind of gets to one of the dimensions of our alliance. Because we work with all the major unions in the country, the Apollo Alliance has not taken a formal stance on nuclear, primarily because it's a job creation issue. We recognize that there are serious environmental questions about this and don't advocate for broader use of power plants. And at the same time, so meaning we're not in favor of commissioning more facilities, but at the same time, we haven't called for decommissioning the existing ones. And again, it's really a jobs issue. We feel that this is a transitional plan we have underway, and that currently with that source of power, nuclear, providing us about 19-20% of the overall power, we need to transition from that.
It's kind of hard in the context of the United States having a lower unemployment rate than Europe, although those unemployment numbers can certainly be picked apart and seen in different ways. But what I'm getting at is that the Europeans have pursued a greener strategy. Yeah. They've pursued some of the strategies that the Apollo Alliance is trying to get the U.S. to take seriously. And in general, those strategies have produced jobs in Europe. But People are concerned that the regulatory constraints around environmental protection, it make Europe a more difficult place to do industrial development and economic development. I don't see at the Apollo site very much discussion of the European experience. Maybe that's a moot point since Americans don't really care what Europeans do in the first place.
Yeah, we don't explicitly talk about it, but we certainly have learned from Germany and Japan and the Dutch experience about supporting renewables and transition to a more sustainable economy at the national level. Part of our policy is recognizes what we, you know, a federalist system that we have here, where the federal government, national government in Washington, is fairly reactive and conservative and being pushed by, you know, a fairly narrow set of interests to design an energy policy. What we see greater opportunity is at the state level. So the comparison between what the Germans and others in Europe have done and what we can do here in the U.S., I think just structurally, politically, we don't have as much leverage at the federal level in the U.S. as we would like. And in part, that's why we've been directing resources towards projects on the ground at the state level, where we found quite a few very receptive governors across the state who are dealing with unemployment issues, who are dealing with the manufacturing sector, downsizing, jobs going offshore, and energy costs going up. So the governors and state legislatures, unlike what's happening in Washington, D.C., are beginning to say, there's a real connection here between future economic growth, the sustenance of our community life, maintenance of good jobs, and creating new opportunities by investing in these technologies. That's what's happening at the federal level in Europe, but unfortunately not in the U.S. Just as a quick example of that, I came across a wire story this morning that the House Republicans in Washington, as part of their cost-cutting effort to help fund the war in Iraq and rebuilding of Katrina, are apparently calling for the removal of support for energy efficiency efforts, which to me seems like a really short-term, very foolish step, again, at the national level.
The state strategies may have more, may at least be able to prove the feasibility of some of the things that you're talking about. So what are some of those state policies?
Well, currently we are working in 5-6 states, most actively California, Oregon, Washington, Wisconsin, New York City, and in Ohio. And in each of those states, we're working very closely with a coalition of labor, business, environmental groups, community groups, to craft legislation that could support any number of policies, such as a renewable portfolio standard that requires utilities and the state to derive a percentage, maybe upwards to 10 to 15% of their power from renewables. We've also been looking at tax incentives for renewables, been looking at incentives for energy efficiency. And some of these initiatives, James, are fairly easy to implement, somewhat non-controversial. Others run into, opposition from other sectors. So the way people can, because you may want to know about this, the way people can become involved in Apollo Alliance is to seek out one of the partner organizations that we work with, be it Sierra Club or Natural Resource Defense Council, or if they're involved in a union, we're working with SEIU, with Teamsters, with all the AFL unions. And we're trying to build, again, a political capacity on the ground. Apollo Alliance has in Wisconsin our resource center, and that center is focused on designing new policies that we can give to a governor, give to a state legislature, and look at best practices as well. And we're finding that as governors are talking to each other, sharing ideas about tax policy, about investment, about new loan guarantees and other incentives, that the legislature in those states is coming along.
The labor movement has been going through some evolution over the last year or two, with the split over whether more grassroots labor organizing should be done or more political organizing. I imagine that Apollo is more of that political strategy, that policy-oriented strategy that the that the mainstream AFL leadership, Sweeney and the others, had been backing. So has that created some problems for the Apollo Alliance in terms of some of the SEIU and the other trade unions peeling away from this kind of a strategy?
It hasn't to date, and we are working actively on the ground with the various unions, you know, all of whom used to be part of AFL and now have split into two distinct camps. We're mindful of the different concerns of those different unions and trying to actively work with both. And again, our strategy is one of reframing the conversation about energy to make the linkage between energy independence and good jobs to convening stakeholders who typically might not have worked together very well, such as unions and environmentalists, although the blue-green coalitions are proving that there is mutual interest between unions and environmentalists, and third, to develop policies. So that's kind of the overall Apollo strategy, and we're finding that we may have to tweak our work in certain states, certain cities, where the split in the labor movements become more marked, but generally, we haven't found it to be affecting our work on a day-to-day basis.
How realistic is it that we would actually be able to wean ourselves from foreign oil? I mean, I think this, you talk here in the Apollo Alliance documents about a 10-year strategy. Is that a 10-year strategy if we were able to spend the a total of $300 billion or something of funding that's sought for this, which in the context of Katrina and the Iraq war doesn't actually seem like that much anymore.
Right.
I'm sure when you first put this together, you're going, wow, $300 billion, but now it seems like a drop in the bucket. But at any rate, you know, how realistic is it? I know that Amory Lovins and others have been working for years on mapping a soft energy path to freedom from foreign oil. But, you know, is this more a propaganda tool or is this a real strategy?
Well, I think it's certainly a strategy, and it's a strategy that we're finding is taking shape and gaining currency at the state level. What we need in this country is a federal energy policy that would get behind a similar type of 10-point plan. You know, I'm not optimistic of that over the next 3 years. Hopefully in 2008 we'll have a change of administration that would be more receptive. But Apollo Alliance's program, in conjunction with lots of other efforts by everyone from Union of Concerned Scientists to Amory Lovins, is building, I think, a political constituency and political market for these ideas. To wean ourselves completely from foreign oil in 10 years, to me personally, seems unrealistic. The economy derives, you know, still importing about 55% of its oil from overseas. We're heavily dependent on foreign liquid LNG and petroleum. So that's going to take, I think, you know, quite frankly, a few decades for us to make this transition. And my hope and Apollo's hope is that in 10 years, we'll find that the economy has become diversified in its fuel source usage and energy source usage, and is, you know, maybe deriving 20%, 25% of its energy requirements from renewables.
And is there a candidate that is closer to the Apollo agenda right now than others within the Democratic camp?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I wouldn't name a particular person, but I can say that we've been approached by a number of individuals running for governor in 06, a number of people running for House and Senate at the state level, as well as some national candidates running for Senate and the House that like the Apollo language, that feel it's an optimistic, hopeful message that in its bipartisan, inclusive nature could be really smart politics for them. And we hope that by the 2008 election, one or more of the Democratic candidates, or maybe someone from the Republican Party, finds the mutual gains, shared gains, to be achieved from an Apollo Alliance vision. I will mention that we have found some interesting bedfellows. We work occasionally with a group called Set America Free Coalition, which is composed of foreign security experts, former CIA, military people, people who you might consider to be fairly hawkish, who also agree that we need to quickly move ourselves away from dependence on Saudi or Kuwaiti or foreign oil for national security reasons. So I think that whole idea is gaining a lot of currency, and we see some specific proposals, for instance, coming from Senator Obama from Illinois and others, Senator Harkin, that look at the opportunities to craft particular initiatives. Apollo has, as I mentioned before, you know, this bold vision, so we hope to introduce a comprehensive piece of legislation that lays everything out. But practically, what's likely to happen is bits and pieces of it will be promoted and hopefully adopted. And I think if we look back at the 2004 election, we saw some rumblings from the Democratic Party, but not as much as we might have liked to see.
Well, one final question, and that's about the Greens, who have more or less imploded at the federal level under the impact of the Nader impacts on the election and whatnot. But it seems that one of the problems on building these blue-green, as you say, alliances, the blue-collar and green activist alliances, has been the anti-technological bias of some green activists. Now, that's not true in the smart energy or alternative energy camp, but in a lot of green politics, there's a kind of anti-industrial focus. And do you think that the Apollo Alliance has been able to take a message, a kind of more optimistic message of a huge alternative energy strategy, alternative technology strategy, to green activists that weans them away from that Luddism?
Yeah, that is not an experience that we've had a lot of. We're working with Sierra Club, with Natural Resource Defense Council, and others across the country. Those organizations and more locally based groups, we're finding, are very excited about green technology. One of the more controversial technologies, as you might assume, is wind, the siting of wind turbines. So we've done some work on permitting and on siting issues, trying to address the concerns, for instance, of the Audubon Society on the possibility that turbines might injure birds or kill birds, which is something that we're very sensitive to as well. But I will cite a few examples quickly. One in Colorado, where we're developing a blue-green alliance on the building of biomass facilities here, where there's a real opportunity to bring environmental concerns about reducing carbon emissions and the and labor's interest in creating new jobs. So there's a really good match and link up, and we're finding similar efforts across the country. It's still fairly new. There isn't a lot of history of working together, but we find the trend is very positive.
Richard, I've been delighted to talk to you today about the Apollo Alliance. You can find it at apolloalliance.org. Richard is the business outreach coordinator. I'm sure he'd be willing to talk to anybody interested in the business aspect. Are you a person to contact about the political activism part of it as well, or should people go to the website?
I'd be happy to be contacted for either, James. My email address is on the website, and I'll just make a brief note that we are very much looking to work with private companies across the country. We feel that business is important in this conversation, and we need to have another voice in Washington and the state capitals, and business always carry clout in those conversations.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Good. Thank you.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts with me, Dr. J, you can contact me at jhughes@changesurfer.com. That's jhughes@changesurfer.com. Or you can read my Change Surfing columns at betterhumans.com, or check out the collaborative Cyborg Democracy blog I participate in at cyborgdemocracy.net. Or you can read my new book, Citizen Cyborg. For more details about Citizen Cyborg, visit cyborgdemocracy.net. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3, thanks to the AInfos radio project. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.